Barracuda!
Hello! And welcome to the Bitter End Podcast with me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
And we are here at the end of Season 10.
The Phantasm Season.
To wrap up that whole giddy, skiddy, silly franchise.
Woo! It is it's a beast, the Phantasm franchise.
And I feel like we have climbed aboard its shoulders and wrestled it to the mother fudging ground, man.
I mean, absolutely. I don't understand what I was doing half the time, but by golly, it was a ride.
Now, listeners, let me peel back the curtain for you to have a little glimpse here. Tom and I quite often like to enjoy a little tin of beer during some of these podcasts, which a long time ago, due to a typo in a text message, instead of tinnies, we have dubbed Ronnies. Well, we're drinking extra large ones today, which are like two tinnies stacked on top of each other. They're double Ronnies, so we've declared them to be Reggies.
In tribute to our man, Reggie the Ice Cream Man, the unsuspecting hero of this franchise. Cheers!
Jizz whale, ya-ya doggy!
Ah, right. So why are we here? We've watched all the films, we're here to unpack it. Because you gotta, I mean, Phantasm is a series that needs a little bit of unpacking. Am I right?
It certainly has a lot of baggage in the...
It's got things on it. It's just, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the films. You know what I mean? Yeah, some stuff. Fucking hell.
Because I'm especially interested, Tom, because when we were finishing season 9, our Jaws season, and I turned to you and I was like, what about doing Phantasm for the next season? My memory is that you blinked at me like a cartoon character and went, Fanta what now?
Yeah, pretty much. I had not... I think, you know, it's one of those things that people have brought up, I think, in relation to us just doing this podcast, like, oh, you should watch Phantasm. That's kind of weird. And be like, yeah, cool. What?
Yeah.
Never heard of it, mate. Never heard of it. You know, does it have a Chucky in it? I don't know. But then I think you just described, it's like got like a grave digger or like, you know, like a funeral director from outer space with giant murder balls, and he's trying to kill a little boy, and the little boy grows up and it's got all the same cast. I was like, yeah, fine. Don't tell me anymore. We'll do that one. How many is it? 5? Fine. Absolutely.
Sweet spot.
Buy the DVD box set. I really enjoyed this. I mean, it's a very peculiar kind of franchise. It's like, it's horror, it's action, it's sci-fi, it's existential weirdness for that film where they just wander around in a desert.
Yeah.
Because they don't have any budget. But a lot of fun and like held together surprisingly, you know, well through 5 films. It was pretty solid through to 3. And then I felt 4 was a bit of a... I think 4 was going to be your Marmite kind of Phantasm film for the Phantasm fans, I imagine.
Yeah, I think so. And it certainly seems like Phantasm fans... Obviously, we're, in the grand scheme of things, we're dilettantes, you and I.
Because, we're noobs.
I'd seen the first one decades ago and loved it, but you know, the others I had not. But the true Phantasm fans with a PH on they fall, and they fall hard, from what I can tell. You know, this is one of those truly kind of, slightly underground franchises that just speaks to a certain type of person on a very deep personal level.
But, I mean, that's cool. I think that it feels like that the fans are, like, you know, very... have a real fondness for Mr. Bannister and Mr. Coscarelli, and I think that... You know, like they're at a level where the fans can get a little bit of something back. Like, they're not unobtainable. You know, Reggie Bannister is not an unobtainable star.
Yeah.
to the fans of this film.
I kind of feel like if we'd asked him to join us on this episode, we would have been in with a 50-50 shot.
Yeah. We might have had to bung him a few bucks, but I feel we could have gotten him. But we didn't, folks. So sorry.
Now, Tom, what is your beat-by-beat, blow-by-blow, 5 movies, start to finish?
I mean, yeah, so I mean, like, yeah, because I think we need to do this because we've watched these, you know, now we do the podcast monthly, we're not seeing these films in quite such rapid succession, and, you know, these are pretty woozy films.
They're woozy, baby.
Yeah, and so, like, you know, trying to keep track of, like, where Phantasm is trying to point you, gets a little bit muddy. So like the first one feels kind of like, okay, It's about, like, you know, like this kid, like his parents have died. He's living with his brother, and then he stumbles across a creepy funeral director who's up to something. He's maybe a bit supernatural. He's bringing back like these little zombie guys to do some sort of evil plan.
Yeah.
And it feels quite sort of like, you know, like trad horror thing. And the tall man is, for my mind, like in this film, the tall man is after Michael because Michael has rumbled him.
Mm.
It's pretty simple. It's like he's seen what he's doing, and so he's like, boy, I'm, you know, he's covering his tracks.
Yeah.
And then you get that swerve ball where it all goes very Dune, and you've got an alien planet and all this kind of stuff, and you're like, okay, bit weird, but still, he's trying to cover his tracks.
And that, for me, is the point that the movie goes from like to love.
Oh, yeah, it's excellent. Like, you know, there's a lot of, like, cool stuff in the movie. Like, the soundtrack in the first movie is fucking banging. But, like, that point where it suddenly goes, like, oh, no, this is a sci-fi thing. And then you suddenly go, like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure, why not?
Hurt me, Daddy.
Yeah. But then, like, because there's this whole thing of, like, it suddenly turns into something where, like, Mike is this character that the tall man has, like, either Mike is drawn to the tall man or the tall man is drawn to Mike, and there's some kind of, you know, like an unspoken prophecy or something going on that, like, the tall man wants from Mike. Like, because in the second film, he's got that connection to the girl who also knows, she knows what the tall man is doing, has never met him.
Yeah.
So now we're getting this thing that, like, there's some kind of, psychic link or something like that going on.
And don't forget, we've also potentially got a parallel timeline or dream state or something to do with Jody, the older brother, who did or did not die in a car accident at the end of the first film.
Oh yeah, just keeps on popping up. Or yeah, it's like he's dead, he's not dead, he's a ghost in a ball, he's a goodie, he's a baddie. Yeah, like Jody's kind of all over the map. And, like, yeah, like, the second film sets up this whole thing of, like, yeah, like, minds being linked.
Mm.
So, you know, like, there's Michael and the girl that he goes to save, and they're linked telepathically, and she also knows what the tall man is doing without having even met him or been in the same town as him or, like, heard of what he's doing. She just knows that there's this guy. And then that all goes away. Because they couldn't get her to come back from the third film or something like that, you know, because where she gets instantly decapitated in the opening 5 minutes. You're like, guess that's not a thing. But we still got this whole thing of Mike and the tall man being connected. He needs him for something, all of this. But also running alongside this, Reggie the ice cream man suddenly overtakes Mike as the main character.
Yes!
Like, Mike is the chosen one. Like, that's the kind of, he is the tall man's chosen one. But then suddenly, after being a B-tier character in the first film, suddenly he creeps his way in front of Mike.
Yeah, there's something, I fucking love Reggie.
I mean, he's great.
There's
he's
something
a lot
of,
fun.
The Bruce Campbell about
absolutely.
Him, right? With that kind of, he plays it. This is by no means an insult. Like, I think he would probably state this himself. It's quite comic book, the way that he sort of states
yeah.
it.
Oh, yeah.
He's very broad. And
he hams it up quite a bit. Funny you mentioned Bruce Campbell, because, like, the fourth film was originally, like, a very early version of it was going to have Bruce Campbell in it as a co-starring role with Reggie Bannister.
That's amazing, because Don Coscarelli made Bubba Hotep that has Bruce Campbell in it as Elvis.
Yeah,
so
that's why I thought that would be the connection. Yeah, the film was originally going to be called Phantasm 1999 AD, which is an amazing title.
That's such a sick title. I really want that.
And yeah, like, would have been, yeah, like, this co-starring role with Bruce Campbell, which would have been fucking amazing. Like, the two of them just hamming it up would have been excellent. But I think that things fell through, people dropped out, the money wasn't there. So we ended up getting a very, very different kind of thinking man's film, maybe.
Phantasm 3?
So, yeah, Phantasm 3 is maybe where Reggie kind of starts really kind of like trying to jockey for position with Mike. We've got original recipe Mike back.
Yeah.
But then we're also introducing all these other excellent characters.
Like Rocky.
Rocky and Kevin McAllister. And is the third one where we see that it's little brains in the murder balls?
I think that's the one that's like murder brains and some of them have little eyeballs and...
Yes, yes. So that was cool. And so this is the point where we're like, okay, so what is the... What does the tall man want to do? He wants to... We're kind of like, okay, well, the little... We find out that it's little brains. He gets like he gets the dead people and he compresses them and he takes the brains out and they go into murder balls and then the bodies become the little kind of like creepy goblin guys.
Yep.
And he's going to use them for his plan, which is brilliant. And he's from the planet. Which is all excellent stuff. And then we go to the fourth film. And this is where the budget fucking falls out of Don Coscarelli's butt. A lot of it is shot in the desert. A lot of it is spent with Reggie and Mike driving around on their own, like separate from each other for most of the film.
Yeah.
In the desert because they had no money. And when you know that they have no money, like, of course they have no money. And it kind of smacks of a film where they're like, man, we just want to make another Phantasm film. How do we make something for this much money? It's like, well, I think that, you know, they had that script with the Bruce Campbell thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Other things came up. It's like, we can't make these films now. So it's like, we have to create an idea that will work with the budget and the means that we have.
I just really, really respect that he just was like, I just want to make another one of these. Yeah. He could have made any other film.
Yeah, I think it's very cool that they went and did that and that they made the film. I also think it's a shame that that is, in my opinion, like my least favourite of these films because it is people meandering around a desert not doing anything. And it's the film that also like kind of... It promises quite a lot or suggests a lot. Like it really just leans all these moments, they're very talky of the tall man and Mike and the tall man and Reggie. And it's all about what the tall man wants from Michael. And this is where it's like suggesting that it's like he's like a real chosen one character. And he's got massive plans for him, which isn't really how it felt at the beginning and isn't how it feels at the end.
Yes.
We never actually... he puts that... there's a murder ball in his head at the end of the third one.
Yeah.
And I still don't really know what that was about. This is also the film, I feel, where time travel becomes a thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of that stuff. Like, so this is the one. The fourth one is where it's like, okay, Mike has that vision of old man, tall man, Jebediah,
Morningside,
in like ye olde Civil War-y times.
And I really like this. They get this is cool. The origin.
I like that, and like I think that he suddenly becomes like this really like nice character. You know, like he's kind of like the difference between him and like the tall man is kind of like, oh, this guy seems lovely.
Yeah.
And then he goes through a portal and he comes back and he's never the same. And it's just like, oh man, I just want a little bit more of what that did to him. You know, like he was looking for a way to unlock the secrets of death, but accidentally he became like many, many aliens full of custard.
See, I think he did.
And a funny worm in one of them. There was a funny worm as well.
I think I mean, I sat right next to you while we watched that film. I think I know exactly what happened. And I think I mentioned this on the podcast. I think he went in, the aliens killed him, and turned him into a sort of a suit that they can wear to be this is, you know, like in any action film where the goodies will like find a guard and bonk them on the head and then take their clothes. I think they've done that to him.
Well, I think that definitely makes sense. And so what we're saying is that like there's, it's kind of he goofed in a way, and he went through this portal and then found a way for a hostile alien race to infiltrate.
Yeah.
With a view to colonizing the Earth.
Doors work both ways, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
That was my take. Now, yeah. I might be wrong. I'm only one gentleman. But
yes.
That's what I think.
Well, that makes sense with, you know, what we've been given. And then the fifth film is just like kind of... is like, you know, getting all the ideas of Phantasm and putting them in a tumble dryer and then spinning round and some shit happening and then that horse gets killed.
I was genuinely very impressed with the fifth film. It does some...
Yeah.
It does some stuff that, like, they didn't need to do, but it came off well. Like, the whole kind of just... the funereal tone. I mean, Phantasm has always been very funereal because it's about an evil undertaker.
Yeah.
But this film, it like I said, it kind of comes full circle and it's about staring in the face of mortality. And
yeah, yeah. I think all that stuff with Reggie was like very cool. Like the bit at the end where it's kind of like you're not really sure what he's doing, but he's basically choosing between dying as a unremarkable man or fighting on in like the worst version of the world you could possibly imagine,
yeah.
But with his friends, is a very cool ending. And it's quite crazy for, like, you know, when they're kind of like, man, our budgets are going down and down and down, that their scope kind of like thematically and like building on the world that they've created goes up.
Yeah.
They're not like, narrow it down, give the punters what they want. Like, they do, you know, you got murder balls. That's what people want, right?
Fucking massive ones.
He shows up. Yeah, exactly. They got to give the punters. Yeah. They got fan, you know, in an age of mass fan service in films, they're doing it, but they're also throwing out some other crazy shit. Like, stick a massive murder ball in it. He'll say boy once. And then, but then we'll do some other weird stuff, like that bit where in the red planet and they're. We just don't have any dialogue, so it's all going to be told, but it's done behind gas masks and telepathically, so we can write it later. Man, there's some wacky shit going on in these films, but it's a ride.
Yeah.
Absolute ride.
Like, start to finish. And I can really recommend watching them relatively back to back, like we have. Ordinarily, we'd watch them week to week. We're doing it monthly now. Even that is close enough. That's cool. I just can't comprehend of waiting sometimes more than 10 years between these films.
Yeah, mad, bonkers, crazy filmmaking. But I like it. I respect that.
Do you think there will be another one?
I don't think without Angus Scrimm.
You can't, surely.
Although we were talking about this off mic, and my pick, if you're going to reboot or, you know, like just recast, can we get John Lithgow to be the tall man? I think it's got to be John Lithgow or bust. He'd be great.
Well, he's just done the Pet Sematary remake, so he's kind of moving into the ballpark of vaguely spooky times.
Yeah, he is a tall man.
He's very tall.
He's got a similar hairline. He's got gravitas.
He's certainly got some gravitas.
So let's get... He could be the tall man's brother.
What?
Bucky Morningside.
Fucking
his goofy brother who accidentally walks through the portal and then he comes back as a slightly more wacky tall man. Shall we move on?
Yeah, because as much as I love John Lithgow, like, stepping into the shoes of Angus Scrimm would be, I think, kind of impossible. So there's other franchises like, I'm thinking of Hellraiser, where they have tried to recast the main villain. There's at least one, probably two Hellraiser films where Doug Bradley does not play Pinhead.
Yeah. Same with
in the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street.
And even with that, like, they had like someone who on paper should have done a great job. Like, you know, seemed like, yep, if you're going to get someone to do it, get Matey Boy in from Watchmen. But no, didn't translate.
Especially with both of those two characters that we're talking about, they act behind so much makeup and prosthetics, right?
But
obviously,
yeah,
their faces
yeah.
are very prominent, but like still, if you really wanted to, you could kind of build up basically the same face. Tall Man's just a bloke in a suit, right? You can't make someone else look like the Tall Man. And the Scrimster...
Big Scrim Doggy.
Big Scrim Dog, he really brings a lot to it.
He's just got that face, he's got that voice, he just holds himself in a way that works. And it's very, yeah, he can't really be recast, really.
I just wanted to read out a few sort of random little facts that I've been able to glean about Angus Scrimm, which is because like I feel like I already miss him.
Yeah, hit me.
And we'll just discuss. So, number one, real name, Rory Guy.
Rory Guy.
Rory Guy. Yeah, that's he's actually got some credits, film credits, under that name.
Okay.
He came up with the name Angus Scrimm specifically for Phantasm because he wanted to sound scarier than Rory Guy.
That's cool. I like that.
Rory Guy is not a scary name.
Yeah.
Number two, he did pass away the same year that the final Phantasm film was released. It is confirmed that he got the chance to see it from his bed.
That's good.
And he said that he liked it.
Good. I'm glad.
Number three, he won a Grammy.
Did he?
Yeah, he won a Grammy, but not for what you would think. He won a Grammy for his day job in between Phantasm films was that he wrote liner notes for albums. And he wrote the liner notes for basically all of the big Beatles albums, all of the big Frank Sinatra albums. If you own any of those albums, not like the original releases, but the ones where they're re-released and there's like all the notes inside that is like, this album was developed in the blah, and all the, you know, all of that stuff.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Angus Scrimm wrote that.
Wow.
Yeah. And there was apparently a Grammy for best liner notes.
Really?
I guess. Like
the Grammys like pattern anything on the back, really, don't they? But good for Angus Scrimm.
Next fact, him and Don Coscarelli became such good mates. Right, so little aside, have you ever seen that Tim Burton film Ed Wood?
I have.
You know how it's the sort of the sweet aspect of that is with the director Ed Wood sort of becoming such good friends with Bela Lugosi.
Yes, yes.
And kind of living with him to an extent and looking after him.
Yeah.
To an extent, that is what happened with Don Coscarelli and Angus Scrimm. They became such good friends that Don Coscarelli was one of literally a handful of people that were there at his deathbed at the moment of death.
Oh, gosh.
He literally watched him
in his final ones.
They were that close. And there's a really sort of kind of a sweet story, but also slightly sad, which I suppose is
that's
fitting,
death for you.
For Phantasm. Mm. But Don Coscarelli went to go visit Scrimm's apartment after he passed away, and he was talking to all these neighbours, and all of the neighbours loved him. They all loved him. They were all coming out for the funeral. And it wasn't until people started giving speeches at the funeral that any of his neighbours realised he was in films.
Wow, okay.
He was a huge part of the community. Everybody knew him. Everybody came out for the funeral. Everybody had nice stuff to say.
But he just didn't...
He never talked about it.
Oh, how weird.
And unless you're into this super niche...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
...like a decades-long movie franchise, you wouldn't know. That's kind of nice, isn't
it? That's cool.
And then the very final fact, that before the first Phantasm film was released, Angus Scrimm wrote Don Coscarelli a really sweet letter that basically said, this film isn't even out yet. Whether it does well or whether it does badly, this is like the pinnacle of my career. This is going to be my Frankenstein. And it kind of was.
I think it was, yeah.
And I think that's nice. And that is the end of my Scrimm facts.
Well, R.I.P. Mr. Scrimm.
Mr. Scrimm, pour one out for a brother.
Much missed. Yeah, yeah. I'm really seeing him as a Frankenstein.
He would have been amazing.
It feels like a bit of like a Karloff kind of guy. Had a similar kind of held himself and, you know.
Well, that makes me think of the movie Mary Shelley's Frankenstein with Robert De Niro as the monster, which makes me think of a Phantasm reboot with Robert De Niro as the tall man, which I would be open to.
Right, so we've got in contention, we've got De Niro and we've got
Lithgow.
Okay, cool. So De Niro's going to be his other goofy brother.
No. I've got one that trumps all of those. I'm sorry. And this will be the end of the discussion. I will not have any contention to this. If you're going to, and I'm not saying you should, if you're going to make one more Phantasm film, the part of the tall man has to be played by Danny DeVito.
So it's like twins? It's like the film, it was like the film Twins.
You just write it in, it's like, oh, he went through his own like shrinking goblin condensing thing and he comes out the other side and he's Danny DeVito.
Yes. Excellent. And we can get Arnold Schwarzenegger to play a murder ball. Right. Let's keep this Phantasm train rolling. So when we've looked at other franchises, there's other stuff. It's not just a film. What kind of an idiot do you take us for? There's going to be like a book and a comic and like, you know, like a rock opera and all this kind of stuff. Some video games. But, as I said, like, Phantasm, maybe not so much, a slight, you know, like, it's the franchise's Gotham films, but it's a lot more small scale, it's more underground, it's keeping it easy breezy. But there's stuff there. So I was having a bit of a look into, you know, are there any books, are there any comics? And yes, there are.
Yes, there are, doggy.
Yes, exactly. Thank you, Reggie. So there is, from what I can tell, like, trying to, like, find some of this stuff, it seems a little bit like it's a bit buried in the internet, in the fan forums and your GeoCities and your Angel Fire fan-made websites and stuff like that, with like gnarly grisly graphics from the 90s all over them, and that's cool. And so it seems that there is a book that was published, very small run, limited run, called Phantasm: Further Excursions into Oblivion.
Good name.
So I feel like this came after the release of Phantasm 4, but before Phantasm 5. So, yeah, it's a limited run anthology book of Phantasm short stories and some essays.
Essays?
An essay or two.
Okay, maybe. Amazing.
It's mostly short stories, and I think it's basically like fan fiction. So it's an anthology of fan fiction, and from what I can gather, I think it had an okay or a thumbs up from Don Coscarelli. I feel this was very limited run, maybe so limited that it kind of to skirt under any kind of like real big copyright infringement laws. But I think, like, from what I gather from like researching some of this stuff, I think like either Don Coscarelli is okay with this stuff and, you know, is quite supportive of the fan community, or the fan community just says that Don Coscarelli is okay with it. I mean, you know, like, what is in the book? Can't say an awful lot about what is in it. One of the short stories is titled A Winged Sphere for a Mint Green Mummy, which is amazing.
That sounds like an aftershave I would wear every day.
Exactly. It is so evocative. But there is one of the short stories is online, which is called The Red Planet. So you can find that if you wish to read some officially Coscarelli-sanctioned Phantasm fanfic.
Please tell me that's fanfic with the double PH.
It absolutely is. So, like, you know, like, what's that story about, you might ask? Well, here's a little quick rundown of what The Red Planet is about.
Hit me!
So it takes place after Phantasm 4, and if you don't remember, end of Phantasm 4, we get that old footage of Reggie and young Mike driving in the ice cream truck, and they're hearing distant voices.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff like that. And this is after Reggie has gone through... Michael has been taken by the Tall Man into a portal, and Reggie goes after him. Then he's suddenly gone back in time, and he's in an ice cream truck. And it picks up with that. Like, that's Reggie, and he's gone back. And he's like, oh, this is cool. You know, like, everything seems real. And then he kind of realizes, no, wait, this isn't real. Or, like, he's kind of gone back in time. And the Tall Man appears. And he has to run away from the Tall Man. The Tall Man tries to make a deal with him. Like, you know, leave Michael. You know, like, I want Mike. He is mine. At this point, he is the chosen one. In the fifth film, I will suddenly say, I'm done with it. I don't care anymore. But at this point, that is not canon. So, and then, like, there's some rumpus, there's some ruckus, and Reggie goes to another portal, and instead of being in the past, Reggie goes into the future.
Oh, holy shit.
And there's been, like, a war, like, remnants of war, and so Reggie can tool up, he can find, like, a load of, like, guns and shit, and, like a breather mask, like an oxygen mask, and goes into, like, an abandoned city, and then he goes through another portal, and this is the one he's been looking for, because this one takes him to the Red Planet.
Oh, my God!
From the title of the short story, and he puts on his breathing mask, and then the whole story is, like, Reggie exploring the Red Planet, but he's only got an hour's worth of oxygen, and so this, like, it keeps on counting down, like, how much oxygen he's got.
Oh, that's cool.
He finds the Tall Man's base, and then, like, there's, Jody, I think, like, the ghost of Jody in that ball appears to him, and then he finds, like, the Tall Man's big, like, master console or whatever, and then Michael as a murder ball, because obviously he's been made, he had that murder ball in his head, is there, and he's like, I am the key to his plan. And it's like that whole thing of we've seen before where a murder ball has been used as a literal key in a door. And it's like Michael forms the key that turns on the machine that will let the tall man invade Earth. And then Reggie's like, nah, mate. And he shoots murderball Michael.
Oh, no.
Fucking kills him dead, blows into a million pieces of tiny shrapnel.
Glock, glock, son.
And then everything starts to explode. And then Reggie's like, I'm going to fucking run. And this is the point when his mask is saying, you've got no more oxygen, mate, Reg. You are fucked, yard doggy. And then he's like, stops and he has to take his oxygen mask off. And he's like, there's a little bit of oxygen here, but really, fuck all. I'm going to lie down and die.
Oh, my God.
But at least I came back for Michael, which is what I said I would do. But I did come back and I killed him. But I killed him to save the world and save him from himself.
That's amazing.
So there you go.
But that is so canonical. Like, if that was the real script for the fifth movie.
Yeah. And it's a good point for, like, fan fiction, because between 4 and 5, you could fit in another movie, like a wholly Reggie-centric movie, which I guess is what they were doing with the TV series, stuff that got reused in 5, because it's like he just kind of comes out. It's like, well, that was shit in there, wasn't it? Basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's like, oh, bloody hell, you don't want to hear what happened in that portal. I'm not going to tell you.
But do not go in there.
Yeah, basically. Good quote, though, from that short story, which I feel sums up the franchise pretty well. After all his years dealing with the Undertaker, Reggie has gained no real insight into the tall man's objectives. If anything, he was more confused and disorientated now than ever. It's like, yep, yep. And that's been written by a fan. Like a fan who has gone on and written fan fiction to be published in an anthology of officially sanctioned fan fiction.
Oh, what an odd beast.
So, in other adventures into printed word, there was also a Phantasm comic.
Ooh.
This was published by Ex Machina Comics. This appears to be the only thing published by Ex Machina Comics. And it was originally intended to be a 4-issue run. Only one issue came out.
Oh, no.
I think that from what I've seen, like, that maybe a second issue, that it was written or it was happening, but then something fell apart and it didn't happen. Again, the first comic is just one story not by Don Coscarelli, but I think, you know, with a Don Coscarelli, you know, thumbs up. So a bit of a, I think it was going to be another kind of anthology thing of fan-made stories. I don't know how canonical they were meant to be, because I don't know how much Don Coscarelli was being like, yeah, this is fine. I was like, yeah, this is fine. Just don't make too much noise. But yeah, so you get this one issue, and this one, like, just found a little bit of artwork on it and, like, a bit about what the story's like. It sounds quite weird and very Phantasm form. Feels quite hard to actually get hold of what actually happens in this comic. But it seems like in this one, the tall man is basically kind of Freddy Krueger.
Ooh.
Like, he actually exists in dreams, and that Michael has some sort of, like, power to manipulate the real world through his dreams, and the tall man gains power by creating fear in Michael's dreams, and that fear gives the tall man power to, like, change the world.
That is Freddy Krueger.
That is Freddy Krueger. But then also Michael wakes up in the year 2047.
Oh, nice!
He's been in a coma since the events of Phantasm 1. Jodie and Reggie died in a car crash.
No! No!
And, like, he's been in a coma for, like, the longest anyone's ever been in a coma for. And, you know, fighting, you know, just all the films have been, like, him fighting the tall man in his mind. So the only other person who's lived for that long in a coma is Rocky, for some reason. And then they go, and then it gets a little bit hazy, like, they kind of, like, fight the tall man in their mind and have, like, a matrixy kind of thing of, like, they can conjure up any weapon they want because they're in dreams, and it's, yeah,
oh,
you know, like,
God.
And then, but then maybe they're not in dreams, and then, like, the dream doctor that they were talking to in the real world is actually the tall man, and I don't know, but that is Phantasm the comic.
That sounds kind of cool.
I like that, you know, like, the fans are, like, doing kind of pretty wacky fanfic in the keeping of
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
It's one of, because again, it's one of these franchises where you could kind of do whatever mad shit you want, and it more like it will fit the franchise because none of it will be any more or less jarring than what Coscarelli has done himself.
I'm going to do some fanfic where it's basically wacky races.
Like, with barracudas, everybody.
With barracudas on the red planet. And that red planet is Arrakis.
That sounds banging.
Yeah.
And that's not the only thing that the Phantasm fans with the PHPH have been making, because there's games.
There's games.
Yeah, there's three games that I've been able to lay my eyes upon to wipe those beautiful soft orbs over, two of which are mods for Doom 3.
Okay.
But the big one, the kind of the, well, when I say the big one, the interesting one is, it's simply called Phantasm. It's for the Atari 2600, that very, very old 2D, yes.
One of the most basic and early home consoles. Yeah,
yeah, this game was released in the year 2008. Mm. So from what I can tell, it's fan-made, but I think it was possibly crowdfunded and involved the pressing of a limited run of real cartridges Atari 2600 for collectors, much like friend of the podcast, Milo the Video Game King of Brighton, would be interested in. So I don't think they're available anymore, but I have been able to watch some videos of gameplay. And it's kind of unplayable. Like, I watched a video where he was trying to sell the game and I couldn't tell what was going on in it. It's random pixels, and then occasionally like a gravestone will like fly across the screen, and then I think it's like a maze, and then like there'll be a soundbite of Scrim going boy, and then it's game over. I don't know what was going on.
I did see a little bit of this online, like I was having a look, and yeah, it was just like, I feel like maybe it's like you're walking through a map or a maze.
But it's first person.
Yeah, first person for the Atari. And it's just like you're just walking through and like random objects are appearing. And who knows what you're meant to be doing. But what I did think looked quite cool is that there was like an Atari recreation of the Phantasm theme music.
Yes.
And for the title scene where you've got like in this little box, there's the tall man standing there while the music plays, and then he starts doing what just looks like a little dance. I don't know if it's meant to be him like walking towards you menacingly, but it's the tall man doing a little dance.
He's got those hips. You know, if you're that tall, you're gonna have hips.
Oh man, you gotta sway those hips, baby. But yeah, the like a super, super basic video game version of that music is pretty banging. Mwah.
But there's other fan-made stuff as well, including fan films that I've been able to see called Phantasm 6 1.5.
Which is such a weird title. I watched this as well. It's very peculiar.
What I like best about it is it was uploaded to YouTube October this year.
Yeah.
So within the span that we have been doing this podcast. So I really hope if you, Daniel Nash, creator of this video, are listening to this podcast, please let us know, because we watched your fan film and we loved it. Well, I did. Tom, did you love it?
It was just a crazy beast. Like the world of the fan film is something that I don't delve into very often. And so it's very, I felt like it was like an insight into a fan's kind of like, well, this is what I would like to see.
And when I watched this, it had 18 views. 1-8.
When I watched it, it had 20.
Okay. Well, so I think I might have watched it twice. So.
So, you know, like notable things I found in this fan film. The word asshole is used a lot.
Just for the listeners, this is a single, it's all in one shot. It's all in one shot. It's POV from the main character who is holding the camera and narrating it. And he's walking around an abandoned power plant. He says he's tracked the tall man there, and now he's trying to find Uncle Reggie.
He's Reggie's nephew, and he's trying to help Reggie and also Jody and Michael by walking into this abandoned power plant to find the tall man. This is all done on like on a camcorder, one shot. All the dialogue is done live. He walks into his power plant. It's just empty. And every now and then he'll find just a bit of like rubber horror paraphernalia. Like,
including so Freddy Krueger's glove at one point.
Yeah, so Freddy Krueger exists in the same universe as Phantasm in this fan film. There's a bit where there's like a tram line that runs across this power plant. And there's just like a severed plastic hand with a bit of fake blood on it. And he just zooms in and goes, nasty.
There are some really good lines.
Which is amazing. And there's a bit where he finds like kind of like a werewolf mask that's like stuck on a grate. and the guy just like kind of goes up to it. He's like, oh, looks like an entrance to, what do you call that shit? Another dimension.
Yeah,
and this is so amazing that again, the guy, the video is 7 minutes and he like fluffs the lines and is like, shall I go back? Nah, fuck it, I'm just gonna keep on rolling with it. And there's a bit where the tall man, supposedly he hears the tall man in the building and he just is like, what was that, boy? Is that you, tall man? That's me, I'm gonna get you. And it's just obviously like, you know, like the same guy's voice, and it just makes you kind of feel like, oh no, this is just like one man's like kind of descent into madness in a factory. It's not a Phantasm film. It's just one man who likes Phantasm kind of slowly going cuckoo.
Yeah, I really like it because he's really locked into the spirit of
but
it.
But that's the charm, because yeah.
Some other lines I wrote down are, he's walking around, he sees like a bloody knife or something that he's previously planted there before he walks through, and he trains the camera on it and he goes, my God, this is so scary. Any normal person would shit their pants.
Yes.
The sun's going down any minute now. Those bastards will know I'm hunting them. And then they will hunt me. I will not succumb to their shit. I will make them shit. And then everyone will know I can kick some shit.
And this is an amazing bit where like, where he just breaks character near the end. He's just getting towards the end and he starts breaking character, and he's just like, he's left the factory. It's like, this is it. It's like, the story is done. And he goes, this has been Phantasm 6 1.5. And then he notices the train track, and then he goes, sometimes he comes in by train with death and destruction. And then he just goes, and then he just finishes by going like, hey, yo, Reggie Bannister, I love you, man. You know, I hope you watch my movie. Put me in your next movie. Make another Phantasm. Put me in it. I'll do it for free. This is my Batman voice.
I love it. It's great.
Let's get this guy off of fucking 20 views.
Yeah, come on, guys. So if you are listening to this, if you're at all interested, it's only 7 minutes. Please give Daniel Nash a view. We just Googled Phantasm fan film. I'm pretty sure it's the first one that comes up. It's the one that's only 7 minutes long.
Yes.
It's well worth a watch. Big hero, Daniel Nash. If you somehow find this, please drop us a line. We would love to hear from you.
Okay, well, where do we go from here? We've been talking about fan-generated content.
We certainly have. Tom, would you say that you are a fan?
I would say I was a PH fan of Phantasm. If another Phantasm film came out tomorrow, I would say, sign me up. I will watch that, you big yard doggy.
Well, would it tickle your per-fancy to generate some per-fan content of your own?
Please, let's do. As they say.
That was horrible to listen to.
Thank you.
Because this is the point during a Bitter End franchise wrap-up where we will normally share our own ideas for sequels for these films.
Where do we think it should go?
Where do we think it should go? What would we like to see? What would we do if we were in the Coscarelli shoes? Now, Thomas, would you care to kick things off?
I'll kick things off. So, I got to thinking about this crazy, crazy bag that we call Phantasm, and how they were originally trying to do a spin-off TV series.
Mm.
And some of that was then repurposed into Phantasm 5. and so I thought, well, let's lean into that, and let's follow on from what we see at the end of Phantasm 5, where basically there's giant murder balls everywhere, and the world is basically doomed.
Mm, mm, mm.
So what I'm proposing is a TV series, but not the series perhaps you're thinking.
Ooh.
This is a bit more of a sitcom called It's a Ball World After All. So this is set, after the tall man has basically it always seems in these films like he's a bit like Skynet. He's always going to find a way to destroy humanity. That's a given. So he's done that now. So in this post-Tall Man world, the world just kind of goes back to being a bit like it was, except there's not really humans, except everyone is balls.
So everyone is balls.
Everyone is pretty...
That's how I feel all of the time.
Everyone is balls. We're making this, you know, we're being true indie. We're making this on a budget. So basically, it's a whole kind of Friends-style sitcom set in New York City with just a bunch of different balls trying to make it in a ball-eat-ball world. We can film this real cheap. It'll be a bit like... Do you remember there was that, like... very puppet-based sci-fi show, Terrorhawks.
Yeah, I do remember that.
And then that, they had, like, these, like, an army of little balls with faces, and they would roll around and be like, okay, platoon over here. I just want to have, like, a load of balls hanging on fishing wire doing a sitcom set in a post-Phantasm world.
There's only two franchises that would work for, Phantasm and Pac-Man.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, I've got some ideas for some characters. So you've got Chad Ballberry, who is a semi-successful heartthrob actor. So it's a bit like, we're thinking like Entourage, except everyone's balls. Which may be what Entourage is like. I haven't seen it, but from what I gather, it's pretty close. But, you know, like the big gag, obviously, for us, the viewer, is everyone goes on about how hot and handsome he is, but he's a ball, and everyone is exactly the same ball, except he's got, like, a baseball cap or something like that. Then you've got General Ballstein, who is a slightly older ball. He was one of the Tall Man's former right-hand balls, and now he's retired after the ball war. And he's kind of like the comedy, grumpy, older man, or ball, if you will. So he's like a murderous Marty Crane from Frasier. And then we're going to have Tammy Ray Ballaway, she's just a small town ball looking for love in the big city. She's just like trying to find her way, you know, working in, you know, like she's going from different crap job to different crap job, that kind of thing. And then we'll have like a kind of like a love triangle / will they, won't they with Tammy Ray Ballaway, Chad Ballberry, and hold on to your butts, Reggie Bannister.
It's not like Reggie Ballister or anything.
No. This is Reggie Bannister. So, you know, what we'll introduce is living in the apartment building that all these balls live in, is we have an apartment that is shared by Mike, who is a ball, in some iterations, he's a ball. He is a ball living with his mate Reggie, who is still a man, but he just has a ball sellotaped to the front of his head. And he's kind of like, well, we can't defeat the Tall Man. So he's just trying to he's just getting by.
Come on, baby.
Yeah, he's just trying to get by. He's like a crazy, you know, he's a human in a crazy ball world. But he falls for a ball.
It's the ultimate fish out of water tale.
And, you know, like, yeah, like he's falling for a ball, and maybe Mike's not, you know, like, so okay with it. And, like, it's... hilarity will ensue. So that is my idea for where the Phantasm franchise should go.
I demand it. I will settle for nothing less than this.
To be honest, Todd, we could probably make it ourselves, and by the sounds of it, Don Coscarelli would just say okay.
I mean, how many characters? We've got that many balls around the table.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Do you want to hit me with your opus?
I would love to hit you with my opus, Thomas. My sequel is, it's a movie, it's a feature-length film, it can come out now. It's essentially Phantasm 6. Now, I love all of the kind of legendary, grandiose titles that a lot of these films have. You know, Lord of the Dead, Oblivion.
Ravager.
And even the one that you mentioned that wasn't made, like 1999 AD.
Yeah.
Things like that. So I just wanted to give one that kind of pulls together all of the great characters with a grandiose title like this. And it is called Phantasm, The Bitter End.
Oh!
So Reggie tries to get away from it all by laying low in a log cabin so that he can work on his plan for taking down the tall man. He brings Rocky along for a ride because it turns out the chunk was only interested in her for her nunchucks. The two of them hole up in a secluded cabin. Obviously, Reggie tries it on. Come on! Worn down by decades of his shit, Rocky finally relents. Unfortunately, Tom, it turns out that their log cabin is on Camp Crystal Lake.
Oh!
Awakened by their bonage, Jason Voorhees comes out of the lake to machete them diagonally across the face. When Reggie gets hit, weirdly, he doesn't die, because it reveals that he has in fact been a Highlander immortal the whole time.
No!
That's why he's been capable of traversing the land of the dead so freely, because he is apart from death. It will not work for him. So Jason is outfoxed by this. So, unsure how to kill Reggie, he turns his eye towards Rocky instead. But lo! She begins to sprout fur and claws. She snouts out, because yes, Rocky was a werewolf from The Howling all along.
Oh.
Reggie the Immortal, Rocky the Werewolf, join forces to finally destroy Jason Voorhees once and for all. They easily overpower him. They tie him up, and they use their stack of dry ice to freeze him into a solid block, just like they planned on doing with the Tall Man. But it turns out that Jason Voorhees was a universal soldier all along.
It makes so much sense.
His corpse was used for testing that would develop the Unisol technology much later. And the cold only makes him stronger.
Oh.
So the fight is back on. Jason knocks Reggie upside the head. Bam! He may be immortal, but his bald head makes him so very vulnerable to this particular kind of attack. While unconscious, he has a spooky dream.
Spooky dream.
Freddy Krueger appears to him and offers Reggie a bargain. Let me take control of your body to take Jason down once and for all. And in return, I will give you what you've always wanted. I will make you the ultimate Lothario.
Oh.
Tempted. You know, he's only one man. Reggie reluctantly agrees. Freddy uses his dream power to adopt Reggie's body and reimagine himself as Steve Guttenberg from Police Academy.
That's what he'd do.
The ultimate true Lothario. So now, with Freddy in control of Goot's body, inside Reggie's body, he is able to seduce and defeat Jason just in the nick of time. But Rocky the Werewolf recognises that he is not her man at all. He's some sort of weird civilian cop who is also an ice cream man and yet has Rizclaw hands. It just ain't right.
It's not right. There's too much going on.
So she waltz out even further. She goes Uber Wolf. She kills him. And now Rocky is truly alone. Racked with guilt and rage, she must satiate her werewolf bloodlust. She bounds out into the night looking to feed. She stumbles upon the one other occupied cabin. It's the Honeymoon Lodge. She creeps up on the residents, stalking them, only to find out that it's Chucky the Doll and his bride, Jennifer Tilly.
Oh, what?
Unfortunately for her, the two of them are the perfect killing team. They take Rocky out perfectly, but now they need an alibi for the killing because they've heard that Steve Guttenberg, the cop, he's on the ground.
Area.
Yeah, so they're going to have to cover this up somehow. And all of the other Police Academy crew, they're going to be coming. So what they're going to have to do is find a nearby kid and pose as his toys. They find Kevin McAllister hanging out by the side of the lake. The real Kevin McAllister from Home Alone, not the Kevin McAllister from Phantasm 3. Okay. So the plan is simply to hop in his family station wagon, pretend to be his toys, and let the family drive them back to Illinois at the end of their fishing trip. Unfortunately, the fishing trip did not go well. While Kevin was hanging out with his toys on the shoreline, the rest of his family were all eaten by Jaws the Shark while they were out on Crystal Lake. So he's truly alone. Brackets, not at home. Realizing they can't help get away from the crime scene, Chucky and Jennifer Tilly have to turn against Kevin McAllister. Kevin McAllister is defenseless. He has no traps to build, except for, wait, what's this bag of marbles that I could throw onto the ground and trip them up? He throws the marbles on the ground. They're strangely silver. The marbles start to float. They gather around him, and then from overhead he hears a baritone shout.
Boy! Cut to black. Yes. Cut, print, that's a wrap, people. That's what we want.
I mean, the licensing might be a bit of a nightmare, but if you could pull it off, I would watch.
I mean, maybe failing that, we can just make some legally distinct characters.
Mandibles the Shark.
Yes.
Kevin McGonagall.
Yes. Bucky the Doll. With Bennifer Billy. Excellent stuff.
Well,
hope you hands out there enjoyed that.
I certainly enjoyed reciting it. Well, so thank you very much for listening to our somewhat rambly Phantasm wrap-up. This is ordinarily the point that we would announce what we're going to be covering for the next season. We're going to be taking a little bit of a break at the time that we broadcast this. Christmas time is coming. Mm. You know, there's things afoot.
There's things going on, you know, that requires we take a little break, as is tradition with the bitter end. Tom Denny goes and gets a job or has a child. That means we must change the way in which we record this podcast. But while we are not sure, you know, what the next big season may be or when that's going to come, rest assured, there's definitely at least one bonus episode that we've got that's got to come down the pipe. And, you know, long-term fans will probably be able to work out exactly what that's going to be. So it's coming.
And I'm very excited to record it. So,
and then we'll be back, you know, when the time is right, we'll do a thing.
Absolutely. So stay tuned to your feeds, keep an eye out, and don't hesitate to get in touch with us. You can reach us on Twitter at BitterEndPod or on Facebook at BitterEndPod.
We love hearing from you guys. Yeah. It makes it all worthwhile.
But Tom, as this is the season of giving at the time that we record this, probably not necessarily at the time that people listen to it, we're around the time of Christmas.
Getting there, aren't we?
I wanted to let you know that I've got you a bit of a gift.
Man, you shouldn't have.
Well, you know, I was really touched by the fact that you went into this season with such open eyes, not really knowing much about it, and now it seems like you're a bit of a fan.
I am a fan, and I really appreciate you giving me a gift, man. That's really sweet.
So I went online and I ordered you your very own barracuda.
Like the barracuda that Reggie the Big Yard Doggy has. The amazing barracuda that appears in all of the Phantasms.
The iconic car. I typed into Google.
Oh my God.
Barracuda delivery.
Mate.
And I'm not
a car guy, but like those American muscle cars, like, I've got a soft spot. I can't wait.
So I've got it right here under the table. Let me just pull it out for you. What do you think? There's your barracuda.
Did you look at the kind of like the dimensions and things when you, because this is actually a barracuda? This is just a big fucking fish, man. Why did you get this big fish? You don't know what's going to happen when you've got a big fucking fish like this in the middle of my living room. This could attract bigger predators.
You mean revenge?
Revenge. Revenge for not having done an end of season gag at the end of season 9. Can you hear it, Todd?
I can hear it! Oh my God! What's that in the water, Tom?
Oh no! Oh no! We forgot to do the end of season gag at the end of season 9, and now Jaws is coming back to get us!
Why did we record this podcast in waist deep water? Why?
Why is this a tradition at Christmas to do this? Ah! Look, there it is! Jaws the shark!
Hi.
And Jaws the shark has got Googlebot!
Remember when you said sharks don't take things personally?
Yes.
Well, we bloody do.
We're really sorry that we didn't do the end of season gag at the end of last season, Jaws the Shark. We're just trying to talk about Phantasm now.
You forgot to do an ending gag on my season, but you remember it for the tall man. 'Cause he's so bloody tall, eh?
I mean, he is, yeah.
So I chomp your barracuda. There. Try not taking that personally.
Oi!
Oh my God, the tall man's here as well. What are the odds?
I mean, I guess it's the end of the Phantasm season. He should be here, but I didn't expect yours. Oh my God, what's gonna happen?
I ain't no boy. I'm a shark. You prick.
Tom, I don't know about you, but I think we should better skedaddle and let these two duke it out. We'll hopefully see you guys sometime soon on the Bitter End podcast. Me, Tom Denny.
And me, Todd Jordan. Bye.
Bye.